clerk will note those who have been able to join us and add them officially to the presence. Members, so this hearing is being held virtually on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01, which can be viewed on the web by the public, as well as information on our committee webpage on how to access this hearing, as well as offer participate in public testimony. Members, we are waiting for a few members to be present that are presenting. I don't see our first author in the room. I do see Representative Hornstein, however. So, Representative Hornstein, this is your lucky day. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You got here sooner than you wanted to. Representative Hornstein, the chair moves to refer House File 1691 to the Judiciary Committee. Representative Hornstein, you have an author's amendment, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have an A1 amendment. Just simply gets the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it in. It clarifies a few things. I can certainly talk about it,
that's okay.
It's simply a technical amendment, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
We'll talk about it if we need to during the Representative Johnson, okay, if we just do a voice vote to get the author's amendment on.
I believe there's an amendment to the amendment as well. So if you could, it'd be nice if you could explain it so people would understand what the amendment to the amendment is.
Okay. All right. Well, then very well. Representative Hornstein, please explain your amendment. And then is the amendment to the amendment your amendment?
That would be my amendment.
Okay. I'm catching up. Representative Hornstein, your amendment, I think you said was a technical amendment. Is there anything else you need
Well, there are a couple of parts. First, we are the main piece here, and I'm just going to get it up here because we're on a little quicker than I thought, Mr. Chair, so let me just make sure I have it in front of me. But the first part of my amendment simply clarifies the role of the post board in this bill. It's a little bit different than last year. We're simply asking the board to update their training on hate and bias crimes and simply collaborate with the Department of Human Rights in making sure that update is approved, and then there's an opportunity for outside entities to collaborate on that training. So let me also call up the second part of this amendment, Mr. Chair. If you'll just allow me to get situated here. The second part of the amendment just clarifies the grants program to community organizations that's envisioned in this bill. Again, the main part of this bill, Mr. Chair and members, is to allow for community reporting of hate crimes. And so there's a grants program from the Department of Human Rights, and this just clarifies the administrative costs of that program.
Very well.
Committee members for their support.
Okay, very well. Representative Hornstein, and obviously I'm trying to move fast because we started late, unfortunately. We've got lots to go through. So, and obviously we're not hearing about your bill yet, but my intention here would be to act on these amendments, and then we'll get to the main body of your bill. Representative Johnson, you have an amendment. The chair has moved the A1 amendment. Do you have an amendment to the amendment?
Chair Mariani, I do have an amendment to the amendment. It deals on page 1, line 16.
I'm sorry, Representative Johnson, is that the A2 amendment?
That would be the A2, the A4 amendment.
A4 amendment, okay. Representative Johnson moves adoption of the A4 amendment. As an amendment to the amendment, got it.
Mr. Chair? May I ask a question of clarification, please?
Representative Clyburn.
Okay. As I'm reading it, there is an A4 amendment, but it doesn't say that it's an amendment to Chair Hornstein's amendment. Am I missing something?
The A1 amendment is the amendment to the amendment.
Okay, I just see it as an amendment. It doesn't say that it's an amendment to an amendment. So I don't...
Line 1.1 moves to amend the amendment.
Thank you very much.
All okay, right.
Hold on, Representative Johnson, because now I'm confused. I mean, I apologize to everyone. I'm going to ask my legal counsel to help me out here. There is an author's amendment. I believe it's the A1 amendment. Is that correct? That's correct, Representative Hornstein, and then also to...
Yes, I had the same question that Representative Clyburn did. My amendment is the A1 amendment.
Right. And the A4 is the amendment to the amendment.
Oh, very well. Okay, Representative Johnson moves adoption of the A4 amendment. Representative Johnson, to your amendment.
What the A4 amendment does on line 16 of the page one, it changes it from 4% for administrative costs down to 2.5%, which it gets in line with what the OJP does as well. If there's a $1 million grant giving out that that's $25,000 that could be used for the program instead of administering the programs. Our grants are been getting larger and larger. The amount of work for a grant doesn't change a lot. And our percentages are getting to the point where a lot of these nonprofits, the administrative cost is running the 901c3 or the nonprofit that's doing it instead of doing what the program is designed to do. So what this does, this amendment gets the administrative costs and fees that can be charged for the grants down in line with what the Office of Justice program does as well, down at 2.5%.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson. I had a conversation, and I know that Mr. Armaconqui from the Department of Human Rights is, I believe, on the call. And I did have a text exchange with him earlier about this very issue. And I did want to note, Mr. Chair, I don't, on at least the committee homepage, I didn't see the amendment to the amendment. So I don't know if there's others that are having that same challenge. But Representative Johnson, it is very clear. I understand what you are attempting to do here. And maybe if Mr. So I did ask that question, Representative Johnson, to Mr. Armaconqui, and he did indicate that 4% was the figure. So I don't know if he's available to explain that figure.
Representative Horsey, if you can do it in 30 seconds, I'm more than willing to entertain that. Is there time for you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, hi. Eric Armaconqui from the Minnesota Department of Human Rights.
Welcome to the committee. Quickly, sir.
Thank you. Yes, so when we were evaluating the administrative costs, this aspect of the bill, a grant program, is a new procedure for our department. And so we looked at what OJP was doing at 2.5. Other state agencies have 3 or 4, 5% administrative costs. And so because this is a new process for our department, we wanted to make sure that we have the adequate administrative resources available to do this well. And so we felt that 4% was a fair.
Very well. Representative Johnson, to your amendment.
Chair Mariani, members. We need to take a deep dive into what we're giving out for administrative costs for these grants. We're giving more and more, just like today with the bill that was passed off the House floor today. The administrative cost for that grant is just about $1 million that could have been used for students instead. Just because of the, and that was So we need to start looking at this. I think we need to start streamlining our grant process. Instead of sending money out to nonprofits, maybe we should just have the OJP do it where we can get more money out there. Because we're taking on $1 million grant at 4%, that's $40,000. If the Department of Human Services can't do a grant for $25,000, maybe they shouldn't be doing grants. Because we got to put the money where it belongs and not align the bureaucrats. So I would hope that the department or the author would accept this amendment. We need to start getting things back in line where they belong. It's an issue that we need to really look at. And I know some of my colleagues in other departments are looking at that as well to get a flat fee for all the grant programs.
So Johnson, do you want to roll on this or voice vote?
I'll do a voice vote. I'll be kind today.
Well, the chair can certainly use it after this rough start. Representative Hornstein, quick last second.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. At this point, I'm going to oppose this amendment. I think Mr. Amarkanku discussed why the fee is a little higher than other agency that we're talking about in this bill. However, Representative Johnson, I will be having follow-up conversations with the agency just to find out a little bit more about this. I think you raise a valid point, but I'm going to go with their advice at this juncture.
All right, I appreciate it then. So all in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 All same sign.
No.
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 Motion does not prevail and the A4 amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments to the amendment? I don't think there are. If not, Representative Johnson, voice vote on the author's amendment.
Can I speak on the author's amendment briefly?
Please. Yes.
Unfortunately, I didn't catch this earlier. I'm not sure if Representative Hornstein knows this or not, but Post Board does not do the curriculum. They approve, they make out learning objectives, and they approve the curriculum that a different department might want to use. They don't approve the courses, just the curriculum, what's in it with the outlines. This amendment does help this a little bit and clears things up, but there's still some issues with it that need to be cleared up on what Post Board's responsibilities are as well.
Very well. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson. That is exactly what you're saying is exactly what we and the purpose of the amendment and cleaning up the language a little bit, because I think you very accurately described my understanding of the Post Board's role.
Okay, very well. Voice vote, Representative Johnson?
Voice vote is fine.
Very well. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is amended onto the bill. Representative Hornstein, there are some other amendments. However, I think it might be good just to hear about the bill first, and then we'll do the other amendments. Representative Hornstein, you have some testifiers?
Yes, just one in the interest of time, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if you want me to go through the bill or have the testifier first.
If you can go through the bill as it pertains to public safety, that would be helpful.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I really appreciate your hearing House File 1691. We heard a very similar bill last year, and I was reflecting on that hearing, Mr. Chair, as we headed into this hearing, and was one of the last hearings that I did, and perhaps this committee did before we had to make all of the adjustments as it related to COVID-19. And I recall a real spirit of bipartisanship, of interest in this bill. We had members on both sides of the aisle speaking in support of it. And it was that moment of unity that I felt very, very good about. We had two teenagers that spoke at that hearing, a Muslim and a Jewish, two Muslim, a Muslim and Jewish teenage young women who spoke of their experiences in school and in the community with hate crimes. And so what's happened in the last year, I think this issue has gotten even more urgent and more timely. We have just been hearing the accounts, the very tragic accounts of what happened in Atlanta last week. We had the issue of the activities on January 6th, which were traumatic for many, images of a Confederate flag being paraded through the Capitol, a T-shirt that said Camp Auschwitz on it, the FBI documenting the role of hate and extremist groups in that insurrection, and many, many incidents that you'll hear about in a minute, particularly as it relates to the Asian American community, Asian American Pacific Islander community, as a result of COVID. There's an excellent editorial in the Star Tribune this morning that documents this. So very quickly, Mr. Chair and members, I will just discuss the three key elements of this bill. First and foremost, it allows for a community reporting of hate crimes. Across the board, experts and law enforcement agree that hate crimes are seriously underreported. And that underreporting undercuts our ability to respond to hate crimes effectively and to hold the perpetrators accountable. And so what we have found out over the years is that community organizations have said, if you give us the opportunity to collect data and report that, in this case, to the Department of Human Rights, we will be able to, again, have more accurate figures and be able to respond more effectively. We also understand that the Post Board has not updated their hate crimes manual in 30 years. This bill acknowledges that problem and sets out, as Representative Johnson mentioned, a process with the Post Board to address the curricular needs of law enforcement when it comes to responding to hate crimes. Finally, we have a provision that addresses a loophole, a couple of loopholes in existing hate crimes law, particularly as it pertains to property. We have seen a number of incidents, again, over the last year, racist, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic graffiti on schools, on buildings, on community institutions, swastikas, and other very hateful messages. And this simply acknowledges that problem. Again, we've seen this in mosques as well, that property is an important piece of this, because when hateful messages are sprayed on faith institutions and community institutions, that has a chilling effect on an entire community. So we want to make sure that the property piece of this is adequately addressed. So finally, Mr. Chair and members, we also have, again, the what Representative Johnson was referencing earlier. We have a grant program for Victims Compensation Fund, as well as grants to community organizations so that they can better do outreach on these issues and and funding the reporting process for the Department of Human Rights. So in conclusion, I would just simply say that this is an issue that I hope can bring us all together. We are a welcoming state. We are a diverse state. We want to make sure that everybody feels safe in Minnesota and that we can make a significant contribution in improving the quality of life for all by updating a needed update to our hate crime statute, which, of course, dates back to the late 1980s. So with that, members, I'm happy to answer questions. I do have, and again, we have many, many community organizations, citizens groups, the Attorney General, who support this bill, but in the interest of time, we will not be having extensive testimony, but I did want to hold up the coalition of Asian American leaders whose support has been critical throughout this process and is particularly timely in this moment, Mr. Chair.
Very well. And you do have someone from the Coalition of Asian American Leaders to testify, is that?
Yes, Mr. Nick Kaur, I believe, I hope, is on the call, and he has prepared some brief testimony.
Let's see if he's here. Mr. Kaur.
I'm here.
Very well. Welcome, sir. State your name for the record. Give us your brief testimony.
My name is Nick Kaur. I'm the senior manager of movement building at CAL, the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for your strong partnership. And thank you, members of the committee. I am speaking with you today, 1 week after the devastating murders in Atlanta, where a shooter targeted three Asian-owned businesses and killed eight people, six of whom were Asian women. Unfortunately, this act of hate does not stand alone and fits with a pattern that we've seen before in history. And here in Minnesota, as in other parts of the United States, we've seen an increase in attacks and violence directed towards Asian American communities. The latest data shows nearly 4,000 reported incidents of anti-Asian violence nationwide, with women representing over 60% of the cases. Here in Minnesota, we have seen physical and verbal abuse on the streets, in stores, and in other public places. Just last Friday, a group of Asian parents and students also experienced hate when a driver came up to them and told them to leave this country or they would be killed. We've seen intimidation, as is the case with a young couple in Woodbury who came home to a note left on their door telling them to take the virus and go home. And there was another incident in Austin, Minnesota, where the words China virus were burned on a family's front lawn. Unfortunately, our children have not been immune to this either, and they have also seen continued anti-Asian harassment and discrimination in schools. We support this bill because it closes loopholes in hate crimes laws, and importantly, it provides support to victims of hate, and it allows us as community organizations to be co-responders to hate. As a trusted community organization, people are already choosing to come to us rather than the police or other government entities. And they come to us because they want to be heard and they want to be supported. Unfortunately, right now, we simply don't have the support to play that role. And often when community members report to us, what we report back is discounted. And so our communities are scared. They're worried and they're asking for our help. So we are asking for your help. What happened in Atlanta does not have to happen, and we have a chance to make sure it doesn't happen again. Everyone should feel safe walking out on the street and feel like they can do it without fear of being targeted or attacked. Our communities are in pain right now. We are hurting, we are scared, and we are looking to our elected leaders to take action. And so right now, we ask for your support and urge you to pass this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Kaur.
Mr. Chair.
And thank you for the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. I've had the privilege to work with CAL for quite a few years on a number of projects in the community. Just an exciting, terrific, civic organization enriching our state. Thank you, sir. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to ask Representative Vang to say a few words. We talked ahead of this hearing that we would want to be, that we are partners in this and in a sense co-presenting this bill to the committee. I'm sorry I didn't, I should have called on her earlier before a community person, but if she could just say a couple of words, Mr. Chair, as a member of the committee and kind of a great partner in promoting this effort.
Let's do that, then we'll move on to the two amendments. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for your work on this. I'll just keep it brief. Since when the pandemic started, the first phase of anti-Asian sentiment started in the Asian stores, like a year ago, when we were dealing with issues of price gouging and stores with empty shelves running out of toilet paper and hand sanitizer, the Asian stores were left untouched, full in stock, because they were deemed unclean and associated with where the virus is coming from. And then the turning point of the anti-Asian hate came from our former President Trump, who called it the Chinese virus, further exacerbating the stigma the Asian community is already dealing with. And then from then on, we saw numerous social media stories of Asian elders getting attacked at the parks, Asian Americans verbally harassed in the parking lots, and many more. Even while all this is happening, the state did not have the infrastructure to capture what is happening in our community. We had to scramble to set up a hotline and recording depository to capture all the hate and bias incidents and crime with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. And I'm grateful for the leadership of Commissioner Lucero prioritizing that work. To date, nearly 10% of all COVID-19 related calls to them were bias and hate incidents. And I know for sure that is an understatement and definitely underreported. This bill can help improve how hate and discrimination is reported and can shed light to the realities our communities are experiencing. And we still have a lot to do to address hate and most particularly anti-Asian hate. And we can't allow it for it to continue. And thank you for that. I yield my time.
Thank you, Representative Vang. I obviously can't speak for the entire legislature, but I suspect we're unanimous in our support of our Asian citizens and residents in our state. I can't imagine the deep sorrow and pain and shock that's going through the community right now. And let us continue to work on good public policy and laws to walk with your communities and other communities as well. Members, there are two amendments. There is a A, let me get my amendments right, because I haven't done that yet. There's an A2 amendment. Is anyone offering the A2 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that'd be Representative Grassl. I am offering the A2 amendment.
Representative Grassl moves adoption of the A2 amendment. Representative Grassl, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Listening to the prior speakers and listening to Representative Hornstein describe some of the things that were being spray painted, some of the things were being said, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I look at this section, section 3 of this bill, and you know, with a lot of the graffiti that was spray painted along a lot of the buildings during the riots in Minneapolis. Anarchists, the Antifa insignia was all over the place. And this is these are pictures that friends of mine who are on the ground in the law enforcement community that were there fighting to protect the citizens of Minneapolis. These are some of the pictures that they took while they were working to try to take care of people and help people. There were things there that I won't use the actual word, but I'll use the first letter of that word. F-12, meeting F the police, and there's a lot of F the police stuff, die pigs, all of that kind of stuff that was there. And so, you know, I look at that, and Section 3 of this bill adds an expanded definition of the bias crime to the statute that carries 25% longer statutory maximum penalty than a maximum penalty for first, second, and third degree assault. Now, you know, the first degree, I would like to expand on this with my amendment that will also add that 25% to first degree assault from 20 to 25 years. Second degree assault with a dangerous weapon resulting in substantial bodily harm from 10 years to 12.5 years. Third degree assault resulting in substantial bodily harm from 5 to 6.25 years. This amendment will also add police officers, prosecuting attorneys, judges, correctional officers, and National Guard members acting in the performance of their duties to this statute that the Hornstein bill. People in these professions, especially these boots on the ground, these officers on the ground, face danger every day. From like I described in my own experience, you can go from a disgruntled customer in a hotel call to shots fired. So it would help these professionals keep safe as they administer justice. And yet, you know, like I said, they're under attack every day because of who they are, or not because of who they are as a person, but because of what they do for a living. And so, you know, I'd like to add that on there. And again, I'm going to take a step back to 2001 when I first became a police officer. And I just gave you a brief description of the scenario of that call that morning of a disgruntled customer. And it turned out this individual had decided he was going to kill me that morning. I knew who the person was, called him by name, asked him what was going on. He hadn't threatened anybody at that point. but in the snap of a finger, I've got a 38 revolver sticking about 3 inches from the bridge of my nose. And he had decided right then and there he was going to kill me. Now, fortunately, I was able to grab that weapon. First round went past my ear as he fired that weapon. And I've got tinnitus in my left ear to this day. I struggled with the person to try to disarm him. And the second round went through my forearm, traveled up through my arm, shattered my humerus on the left arm. So I was down to one arm, trying to fight this man off, still trying to disarm him, trying to bring it to a peaceful resolution. And went on, fired one more round through the couch as I stuffed the gun into the couch before my partner was able to get a clear and safe shot and stop the threat. Now, you know, I can give you another example of what went on, of officers being targeted because they're in the uniform, because of what they do for a living, not because of who they are. A little more than a year ago, Waseca police officer Eric Mattson was shot in the head responding to a call. The perpetrator in that case was only given 20 years sentence for his attempted murder. I look at that and I'm thinking, my goodness, this officer's life has been changed forever. He's slowly recovering, but he will never return to work as a police officer. And that was, you know, because he was doing his job, responding to a call. Someone decided they wanted to kill him. So, you know, this leads me to this, you know, Representative John Petersburg has a bill that would increase the penalty for first degree assault of a peace officer, prosecutor, judge, correctional officer. That's House File 185. And this bill is sitting in the committee's jurisdiction. But we've been working to try to get some of these bills heard, Mr. Chair, and I'm hoping that this will shed a good light on what needs to be done. I'd like to lobby for that bill to get moved forward. If you please consider that. If we're going to increase the penalty for assault motivated by bias, this should also certainly include bias against criminal justice officials, and that's why I'm advocating for this amendment for your support, for the committee's support. And I ask, Mr. Chair, committee, as someone who is speaking from firsthand experience, someone who put on a uniform every day to go out and serve and protect my communities, my counties, the state. And the only reason I was shot in the line of duty is because I had that uniform on, because of what that person associated me with. Not because of who I am, not because of the color of my skin, not because of whatever religion I am, but because I was wearing that uniform. So I'm asking the committee to please add this amendment on to this piece of legislation so that there is protection all around. And I ask for a roll call on this, please.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just would recommend a no vote on this. You know, we do already have enhanced penalties for various issues related to murder, assault, fleeing a police officer, obstructing a legal process, disarming a police officer. Those are all in Minnesota statute currently. Section 609 is the section of law. So we already have this in place. And I think the second issue, Mr. Chair, is that in human rights law, in civil rights law, we have very specific protected classes, you know, based on their identity, not their profession. And I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind. And so for those two reasons, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for no vote on this amendment.
Very well. Representative Grasso moves adoption of the A, renews his motion to adopt the A2 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
No.
Chair Mariani, nay. Vice Chair Frazier?
Absolutely not.
Vice Chair Frazier, nay. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Edelson, nay. Representative Feist?
Nay. Sorry, Representative, nay.
Representative Feist, nay. Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins?
No.
Representative Hollins, nay. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Representative Hewitt, nay. Representative Cleavorn?
No.
Representative Cleavorn, nay. Representative Long?
No.
Representative Long, nay. Representative Lucero?
Absolutely, positively, yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
No.
Representative Pinto, nay. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
No.
Representative Vang, nay. Representative Zhang, excused. That concludes roll call with 8 ayes and 10 nays.
With 8 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. The A2 amendment is not adopted. There is an A3 amendment. Is someone offering the A3 amendment?
And Mr. Chair, I will offer the A3 amendment.
Representative Lucero moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Representative Lucero, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Chair Hortman, or not Hortman, Chair Hornstein, for the great conversation. And while we agree on a great many things, and probably the most important thing we agree on is the best city in all of the state of Minnesota is the city of Dayton. But there are a few things that we do not agree on. And I do have some concerns with my good friend's bill. And so when I'm looking at Section 8, actually, let me preface it with this. I was actually listening to the testimony and some of the comments from Representative Vang and others. And we have my own family makeup is a very plethora of diversity. On an ethnic level, we've got Hispanic, we have Black, we have Asian, and I think I'm even forgetting one as I'm in my mind's eye going around the very diverse family I've got. On a religious level, we have Christians, we have Islam, we have Hindus. So we have a very great diversity in just my own family. So I can appreciate the very benefits of diversity, and I can very much appreciate the concerns when there is hate towards groups for nothing else other than who they are. Very much can appreciate that, and that's very angering because no matter what a person's background is, no matter what they are as a human, they deserve to have their individual liberties protected. But that is different than some of the I think, the definitions that are going to be expanded here. And among them that causes me concern is gender identity, gender expression, and expansion in this area. Because I believe in science. I believe that if you have an XY chromosome, you're a male. And if you have a YY chromosome, you're female. But I think that this, the language in here is going to put Minnesotans in an awkward position of having to be science deniers and having to choose science over somebody's confusion. And I, in preparation for this, I was reminded of a YouTube video, and I looked it up just to refresh myself of the details. And it's a minute, 36 seconds. And if we had time, I'd play it, but it's riddled with curse words, so I can't play it for the committee here. But it is a short video. And it's a man who is confused and wants to be called a woman. And when he's not, he goes on a rampage, a blue streak of curse words, and starts kicking over things, and it happens in a GameStop store. And I'm very concerned about people that want to believe in science and call people what they actually are rather than they're confused and trying to be called something that they're not. So the amendment that I'm offering is, it just simply reads, a peace officer is immune from claims and is not subject to any suits, liability, damages, or any other recourse, civil, criminal, or disciplinary arising from any report made pursuant to this section here in the bill for not making a report alleged to have been required under the paragraph, under the bill here, provided the peace officer acted in good faith. And if no report was made, the peace officer did not know that the crime was motivated by bias or investigated the victim's allegation that the crime was motivated by bias and determined that it was not motivated by bias. Good faith is presumed until proven otherwise by the complainant. And the complainant has the burden of proving lack of good faith. So members, we're in a situation here where somebody's gender expression, there might be some confusion there. And I don't want to put our peace officers in a position where, even though they acted in good faith, they might be subject to disciplinary action. So I would ask for a green vote on the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lucero. I recommend a no vote. There's a couple of issues here. Number one, the bill doesn't really deal with immunity. I think we're getting into sort of the area of debate, I think, when we talk about police accountability, that of qualified immunity. And my understanding is that there will be a bill perhaps coming on that to this committee shortly. But I think, Representative Lucero, your point speaks to the training piece of this bill. And that is why I think that, to the issues you raise, I think the update of the training is very, very important to, address some of the issues that you raise. I know we have an expert on the line who could talk further about gender issues, but I did want to just mention that, we are very, very concerned about the exponential increase in hate crimes directed at the LGBTQ community, and particularly transgender women of color, and heinous crimes, violent crimes. And everybody should be protected. This is the bottom line of our civil rights and human rights laws in the state. Everybody is protected, no exceptions. And so when we look at this bill, I think, again, you speak to the importance of training for law enforcement, and that's what this bill accomplishes. And Mr. Chair, again, we do have one of our former colleagues who could potentially talk to this issue. I knew that Representative Lucero had brought it up last year in the Judiciary Committee, so I know that he has some concerns about it. And we do have our former colleague,
Representative Horsey, we're going to move to a vote on the amendment.
Thank you. Roll call, Mr. Vote, or Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been called. Representative Lucero renews his motion to amend House File 1693 with the A3 amendment. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
No.
Chair Mariani, nay. Vice Chair Frazier?
No.
Vice Chair Frazier, nay. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Edelson, nay. Representative Feist?
Nay.
Representative Feist, nay. Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins?
Nay.
Representative Hollins, nay. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Representative Hewitt, nay. Representative Cleavorn?
No.
Representative Cleavorn, nay. Representative Long?
No.
Representative Long, nay. Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
No.
Representative Pinto, nay. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
No.
Representative Vang, nay. That concludes roll, Representative Zhang excused. That concludes roll call with 18 ayes and 10 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Gunfalami. On a vote of 8 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. The A3 amendment is not adopted. Representative Ornstein, last few seconds on your bill, and then we're going to take a vote on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for a great discussion. This bill will help people feel safer in the state of Minnesota, and I urge a yes vote.
Very well.
Chair Mariani, I would have liked to discuss this bill a little bit. You never gave us an opportunity.
Representative Johnson, I certainly have given everyone an opportunity to speak. Do you wish to speak now?
I do. We were speaking on the amendments before. This is the first time with the bill.
Representative Johnson.
I'm Chair Mariani, members, I'm disappointed we tried to make a bill that's got some issues a little better. I'm disappointed in some of the testimony I heard. They talked about the Atlanta issue, and if the original reports that came out were not good, the news reports, I have a lot of my sympathies to those families out there. But during the investigation, it turned the only crime bias was against pornography. The shooter actually said he had a problem with pornography and he was going after those businesses to try to help his issue with pornography. It's unfortunate that what happened, there's a mental health issue that needs to be dealt with. I'm hoping that that person will get the help he needs, but he also held accountable for what he did. It was horrible. I know I've been looking at the, I lost my website I had up. A Bureau of Statistics, they use what's called the National Crime Victim Survey. It's a lot different than what the narrative we're hearing. Yes, is there crimes of bias? Absolutely. Do they need to be dealt with? Absolutely. But like Representative Lucero said, some of the definitions and some of the stuff put in here goes way beyond what's going on. We already have sexual orientation in it. Now they're adding, find my page I marked in here, adding other things.
9.3.31.
I believe that's where I was getting to. My fingers will work. But they added extra things. Right now, there's two sexes, male and female. Sexual orientation, last time I heard was, the number I heard was 87. I don't know how that works out, but it's going to, and they keep adding. So it's going to be hard for some of these individuals to do it. I like the idea of looking into it, getting the information on those grants, but I think it should be done by, not by outside groups, but it should be done in his amendment. He had had three different grants going out. It could be done with just one or two, dealing with either Department of Justice or Judiciary looking into it. A lot of that information will be in the judicial system already. And with that, I do have some problems with this bill. We had some problems with it last time. I also authored House File 107, which was the issues that we dealt with last year that were agreed upon. Unfortunately, that wasn't brought up. So, but with that, with some of the things in here, I cannot support this bill, and I'm going to ask my members not to either.
Very well. Representative Vang, and then we'll move to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to correct the record that reference made about the Atlanta gunman and how folks were quick to justify his actions. And I will just say that nothing is more racist than to blame a group of people for your problem and then further dehumanize them as sexual objects. I would just leave it at that, and I hope members reflect on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vang. The chair renews his motion that House File 1691 as amended be referred to the Judiciary Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye.
So Vice Chair Frazier. Building up behind us now. The interesting
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel.
No.
Representative Grossel, nay. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, nay. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, nay. Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
No.
Representative Poston, nay. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, nay.
Representative Raleigh, nay. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang, excused. That concludes roll call with 10 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. On a vote of 10 ayes, 8 nays, the motion prevails. And House File 1691, as amended, is referred to the Judiciary Committee. Thank you, Representative Hornstein, for a very important bill. Best wishes in the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Members, we're going to revert to House File 167, Representative Stevenson. The chair moves to refer House File 167 to the General Register. And Representative Stevenson, I believe you have an author's amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. My author's amendment does, I believe it is an A4 amendment, and it makes some minor changes, gets the committee gets the bill in the shape that I'd like the committee to consider it.
Very well. Representative Johnson, voice vote?
Voice vote is fine.
Very well. The chairman.
Could he explain his, it's rather lengthy. I wonder if he could explain the amendment.
Certainly. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson. It principally makes two changes. One is, without trying to get too much into the weeds of the bill, I'm sure I'll explain the whole bill after the amendment vote, but it does further exempt all, or it requires PSIs in all prison commit cases. And the second piece is it creates a working group in the Department of Corrections to look at how probation conditions are assigned at sentencing.
Very well. Representative Johnson.
Voice vote is fine.
Okay, very well. All in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed. And House File 167 is amended with the A4 amendment. Representative Stevenson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill relates to pre-sentence investigations. And I'm sure that this committee has discussed pre-sentence investigations in other hearings, but just as a baseline for anyone who might be watching or just as a refresher, a pre-sentence investigation is a document that's prepared by the probation department after a plea or after a defendant is found guilty at a trial, but before, as the name implies, before the defendant is sentenced by a judge. The document is quite lengthy. It's usually about 6 to 8 pages, single spaced. And I like to think of it as basically your defendant's life story. It talks about their family. It talks about their upbringing. It talks about their education, their work history, any substance abuse, any physical health issues, any mental health issues, prior criminal activity. It really, probation does a deep dive into this individual. When, as this committee is well aware, we have a guideline sentencing system in Minnesota, you know, we have certain people who, as a function of those guidelines, their presumptive sentence is a prison commit, and other people whose guideline sentence is a presumptive probation. When the court is trying to decide at sentencing whether to depart from those guidelines, whether to send someone to prison who otherwise would go to probation, or send someone to probation who otherwise would go to prison, an upward or downward departure, the PSI is incredibly valuable. It's incredibly important to the court in making that decision. It's incredibly important to a prosecutor in making an argument to the court, or informing the argument that the prosecutor might make to the court, and same to the defense. But when the outcome is known, when we're not trying to decide whether or not someone's going to probation or prison, when we know they're going to do probation, we know they're going to go to prison, the PSI is perhaps less important. Ultimately, what happens a lot, particularly in very low-level felony cases, PSIs are prepared and no one ever reads them. It's inefficient and wasteful to prepare a PSI in those circumstances. There's also a problem in that there's a conflict right now between Minnesota law and Minnesota criminal rules. Minnesota law says that a pre-sentence investigation shall be prepared in every felony case. The rules of criminal procedure say it may be prepared in a felony case. And the consequence of that conflict is that some judges, particularly in our more populous counties, are ruling that the rules of criminal procedure are controlling, and then they're declining to do PSI. So what this bill is trying to do is really think about, when do we need pre-sentence investigations and when are they really not necessary, and trying to set that aside. So after the amendment, we're really zeroing in on cases where there's that departure potential, where someone could go to prison who otherwise would go to probation, or vice versa. Some very serious crimes where the information collected by probation is perhaps useful for people who are going to be under close supervision, either in their supervised release or in their probation. Prison commit cases, because the Department of Corrections believes that the PSI is very useful to them as they're doing their services. But for those low-level felony offenses, they would become discretionary. Still could be requested by the defense, the prosecutor, or the judge. It's not that we would never do them, but there wouldn't be the presumption that they would always happen. Now, the other thing that the amendment that we adopted today does, as I alluded to, is it creates a task force to look at probation conditions. Because in talking to some of the stakeholders involved with this issue, there was some discussion about how we need to make sure that our probation conditions that we're attaching are evidence-based, that we're not either failing to put on conditions that make sense or putting on conditions that don't make sense just out of habit or custom without looking at evidence. And one thing that you can use, and I have used pre-sentence investigations as in my capacity as a working prosecutor, to argue for certain conditions of probation. So there was some concern that by eliminating the PSIs from those low-level felonies, then there's no evidence to base those recommendations upon. And I understand that concern, but I think using the PSI to set probation conditions is like taking a sledgehammer to an ant. It's way more work than is necessary or useful to provide that evidence. So what we want to do is take some time this interim, get everyone to the table who understands, who's involved in this process, and have a conversation about what information would be most useful for judges to have when determining what probation commissions are set. So that we're not relying on the PSI, but instead relying on some other document. In Hennepin County, where I work, we actually have already started kind of going down this route where judges can order tiers of PSIs, and the lower tiered PSIs have much less information, are more focused on probation conditions. But obviously, we should be taking a more unified approach across the entire state, not just doing different things in different counties on sentencing and probation that creates a lot of frustration and a lot of inequitable outcomes, in my view. So that would be my summary of the bill, Mr. Chair. I know that I have a testifier, and I think there are some other members of the public who wanted to testify to this as well.
Representative Stevenson, I do have a Devin Bruce here. I strongly suspect that what he's going to say pretty much mirrors what you just told us. So I'm going to ask Mr. Bruce to not repeat what you just told us, be as brief as possible, and then we'll move on to the next testifier, and then we'll wrap up the bill. Mr. Bruce.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try and be as brief as possible. My name is Devin Bruce. I'm the Public Affairs Coordinator for MAPE. We're an association, or a union of representing over 15,000 state employees, including about 350 active correction agents supervising individuals and communities across Minnesota. Not to go back over what Representative Stevenson had talked about, but we are really trying to manage caseloads for our agents. We are largely a community supervision state, and we have over 20,000 individuals who are being supervised in the community. After years of coming to the legislature asking for more agents, which is the solution. Regarding the PSIs, this is just kind of a Band-Aid on the dam. We need more agents, and after years of coming to the legislature and returning without any additional agents or with too few, and then we just get backlogged, we tried to find some solution to help our agents actually manage their caseloads and provide best practices so that these individuals who are in the community can receive the top quality services and really achieve that mission of the Department of Corrections of transforming lives for a safer Minnesota. Just a couple comments on the amendment. We didn't have time to address some of our concerns with it. I know that some other folks and stakeholders had input on it, but we'll be working with them so that when this is laid over, the final bill will have a little bit more of a reflection of peace in the valley. So I wanted to thank you for that, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. I appreciate your presence and your conciseness as well. We have a public testifier, Ms. Kelly Mitchell from the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Ms. Mitchell, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Hi, my name is Kelly Mitchell, and I am the executive director of the Robina Institute of Criminal Law and Criminal Justice. I'm here in that capacity today.
I always get your handle wrong. I should always be asking that. Kelly Mitchell from the Robina Institute is here.
Welcome. Yeah, I mean, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am the chair of the Sentencing Commission, but I do have to make it clear that I'm not here on behalf of the commission today. They haven't discussed this issue.
Yeah.
So this is my other hat today. I did get a chance to talk with Representative Stevenson about this bill, and I want to thank him for that. I think it was a really great conversation, and the task force, I think, largely rose out of that conversation, and I really appreciate the addition of the task force, because he's right that we do need to look at probation conditions in Minnesota. In some of the work that we've done here at the Robina Institute, in two counties I've worked in, the average number of conditions that people get for probation is between 14 and 17 conditions, whether that's misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, or felony probation, which is too many. and we also see there's not a lot of variation. So we don't think that they are targeted to what people really need to help them succeed on probation. I really want to thank you for that piece, but I also do want to express a few concerns I have about the PSI side of it. Because I think that while I appreciate that that it is time consuming to complete the PSIs, I think it's premature to narrow that policy this year and to eliminate PSIs in a lot of probation cases, because we haven't yet had the discussion about what should be in the PSI and what information needs to go before the court. And that is really the discussion that needs to happen in Minnesota. We are really trying to be an evidence-based practices kind of state. We're trying to get probation to line up with research and practice to make sure that what we're doing is the thing that works for people. And so to just lop off a bunch of the PSIs, unfortunately, sort of I feel takes us in the wrong direction, because the very information that we might need on that case is no longer going to be provided. I would like to see the working group incorporate this concept of what should be in the PSI. We could come back here a year from now and decide that the list that Representative Stevenson has put together is exactly the right list. But I think the problem is right now we haven't had the discussion yet about that. And my concern is a lot of those low-level offenses that would now be optional under this bill to get a PSI for are drug and property crimes and usually involve substance abuse issues. And so that's a place where we do need that information in front of the court as to what's going on in this person's life and what can we do to help them move on to the next stage. Now, it may mean that, you know, the big, long, six-page family history that we put together in the PSI and that's required under statute isn't the level of information that's needed in those cases. But let's have that conversation first and then come back and craft a statute that is more refined, that targets PSIs where they're needed, and targets the kind of information that we need to give to the court. So that would be my request, is that this just be somewhat slightly altered so that we have that PSI discussion first, we have that conditions discussion, and then we come back and refine it next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell from the Rubina Institute. Members, quick discussion, Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, Representative Stevenson, I want to thank you for bringing up the fact of what's going on. What my side has been trying to bring up in the Judiciary Committee, that the legislature cannot tell the judges how to run their courts and what they have to do. Yes, our law says they shall do these PSIs, but they don't have to because they operate under their own rules. They're a separate branch of government. So, but I like the idea that you've gotten it better from what you had the last time I heard this in judiciary, I believe it was judiciary, where if they're going to prison, presumptive prison sentence, they have to do these PSIs. I would love to see a PSI done on every case because there's information that's going to be found out that might change whether it's a departure upward or departure downward, depending on the pre-sentence investigation. Other crimes may be found that the person has done may be found in other states because of the PSI. So with that, I also like what Ms. Mitchell said. I think this is something that we need to look into further, what should be in the PSI. I see where it sounds like we're going to lay this over. I do ask that Representative Stevenson, that you do work with Ms. Mitchell, try to get this figured out, because these PSIs are important, and I think doing the proper one would help out a lot. Thank you.
Good advice, Representative Stevenson. Last few words, and then we'll move to layover.
Yeah, just a quick thing. Representative Johnson mentioned that, you know, it could be useful to have the information if there's going to be a departure up or down. The bill does say that if there is a motion for a departure, so if departure is at all possible, there has to be a PSI. And he mentions using it to find crimes in other states. That's actually the sentencing worksheet that looks at, identifies the score that the defendant has, not the PSI. The worksheet is often submitted with the PSI, but it's a separate document and would still be required. So those concerns are already addressed by the bill, but happy to keep working about it. The last thing I want to point out, just, you know, I think Ms. Mitchell raised a great point about how PSIs, you know, needing information in the context of these low-level offenses, property and drug cases. But I think it really illustrates why the PSI is a bad tool for this. Because if you're looking at whether someone has a substance use problem, a substance use disorder, the PSI is going to document what their history has been, but it's not going to do the work that you see in a chemical dependency evaluation, what we call a Rule 25 evaluation, where we look at their needs and risks and figure out what kind of treatment is appropriate. That work is not done in a PSI. It's a different evaluation. So it's not a great tool for people who are typically in those low-level offenses. Her point is well taken, that it's like the only tool we have right now that happens all the time, but it's a bad one, and we can do better. So thanks for the consideration. Thanks for the hearing, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to continuing to work on this issue.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing us something I think we should overdue for us to look at. With that, the chair, I'll leave over House File 167. Representative Edelson, House File 290, Representative Edison.
Chair Mariani? Representative Johnson.
Very well, Representative Johnson.
I just got notified dealing with the next bill, House File 41, that there's a letter from Lakewood Health Systems dealing with that. This is the second committee that this letter has not been posted in. I did forward it when I found out about it to Mr. Landy, and see if he can get it posted so the public can see it, because like I say, this is the second committee that this letter has not been posted.
Representative Johnson, I believe our committee administrator heard you, and we'll make sure that's posted.
Thank you.
However, the next bill is House File 290. Representative Ellison moves to refer House File 290 to the General Register. Our intent is to lay this over as well, so we're going to be very brief. Representative Ellison, your bill is before us. Do you have an amendment?
Mr. Chair, and I would also like to move the A1 amendment before the members. It's a technical amendment, and my testifier, Bob Small, can explain the whole bill once we adopt the amendment, please.
Super. Representative Edelson moves adoption of the A1 amendment. Representative Johnson, voice vote?
Voice vote is fine.
Very well. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is amended onto House File 290, Representative
Ellison. Mr. Chair and members, this House File 290 makes some clarifying changes to the felony drive-by statute. And to keep it simple so you don't hear duplication, I am going to turn it over to the expert, Bob Small. This is a county attorney's bill, and he will be able to explain to you what this does. It's a pretty simple bill, but Judge, if I can pass it to you.
Super. You're always welcome in this committee, Judge Small. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
Thank you very much, Chair Mariani, members of the committee. My name is Robert Small, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. And understanding the time, I'm going to kind of briefly explain this, but we'll stand for any questions in the event anybody has any. So there's a drive-by shooting statute, and that drive-by shooting statute, as interpreted by our Supreme Court, has two parts. The first part is the substantive crime of drive-by shooting. And in order to commit the substantive crime of drive-by shooting, the person needs to shoot at or near or toward a building or a vehicle. The current substantive crime does not include shooting at a person. So a drive-by shooting, the substantive crime, does not apply if you are shooting at a person. So our Supreme Court said that there's two parts to this statute. One part is the substantive crime, and the second part is a sentencing enhancement part. And it is the sentencing enhancement part where if you shoot at a person, you get a higher sentence, but you first have to commit the offense of shooting at a building or shooting at a vehicle. And that, the Supreme Court decided, was a strange result, but that's what the legislature wanted when it passed this statute. We don't think that's really what the legislature wanted. And so what we have done is come forward with this bill to clarify the drive-by shooting statute so that if you shoot at a building or another vehicle or a person, you have committed the offense of drive-by shooting. I hope that is a very simplistic but understandable explanation about why the drive-by shooting statute needs to be clarified. And Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions.
Very well. All very concise members. Well, Judge Small, you did a great job of explaining it. They're all perfectly understanding it.
Thank
Representative
you.
Ellison, final thoughts before we lay this over.
Just would ask members for their support. Thank you.
Very well. And I did notice that this bill has not moved over any other bodies. So wise for us to lay this over at this time for possible inclusion. All right. With that, the chair lays over House File 290. I'm sorry. The chair lays over 290 as House File 290 as amended. Thank you, Judge Smalls. Our final bill for today is House File 41. Representative Frazier moves to refer House File 41 to the Health and Human Services Committee. Representative Frazier, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion. House File 41 is emergency leave for COVID-related matters. I won't spend a lot of time going into this because this bill has been in several committees already. Most of the members here have heard this presentation and heard the testifiers on several occasions. I will say today, in light of timing, I had two testifiers that were prepared to testify. They have now had to step away. One, a mom to deal with some child issues, and two was a Department of Corrections individual that actually is having his COVID vaccine administered right now. And so that is very important. So he cannot be here today. But so House Bill 441, what it does is it seeks to capture the workers that were left out of the federal leave provisions that were provided back in March of 2020 under the FFCRA. And also moving forward, the language under also the extension of the FFCRA, and then also the language under the American Rescue Plan that is currently in place. This bill will capture that for individuals. What it does is it provides 80 hours of sick leave or a paid leave for COVID-related matters. It does not benefit on employers to give to employees. What it does instead is if you are already providing this benefit, and if it was more generous, you don't have to worry about that. You already covered your employees. And it also does not require you to go back and find employees that have left a particular employer. So the retroactivity piece is what we hear a lot of talk about. If someone has left the employer, the employee doesn't have to go and search for that employee to recoup the leave that they had to expand during the time that they worked there. It only covers employees that are currently employed with the employer. There is also lots of conversation about the cost of this. There is the government tax credits that are still in place that have been extended and that will be there for employers that are 500 or less to help cover for that. And it is dollar for dollar amount. There is also funding. We are also looking at the funding that is coming in from the federal government now that is potential or possibilities that there could be funding set aside for some businesses to help deal with the cost of this if they actually have a cause. We're here today because this will have an impact on our corrections folks in public safety. And actually, we've got a fiscal note for that. So that's why we're here having this conversation in public safety today. So with that, I will yield for any questions. And I will note that I do have a individual here from the Minnesota Nurses Association, because this bill started in a special session, as you all know, to help deal with healthcare workers that were left out. So I do have someone here, Jessica Nyman, is here for any questions of how this may have impacted healthcare workers, if there are any. But with that, Chair, I will yield for any questions from committee members.
Very well, Representative Frazier, I'm hoping that we'll stay focused on the public safety corrections impact of the bill, seeing as this bill is traveling through several other committees to vet those portions as well. Questions, members, comments? Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I'm just wondering, now we're past second deadline. I'm just wondering what the plan is for this bill. I've looked. It is going nowhere in the Senate. They haven't had a single meeting on it. And like I say, we're past deadline here. I'm just wondering what the plan is for this bill.
Representative Johnson, there is I haven't seen the fiscal note, but there is a fiscal impact. Representative Frazier just briefly alluded to that, which certainly makes us eligible for us to continue to have this conversation as we prepare our finance bills.
Has there been a fiscal note requested? Because there is not one this year.
Representative Frazier.
Yes, there has been a fiscal note requested. I believe we do have a fiscal note for the impact that it has on corrections, which is why it's public safety. And I will note that also that that has delayed this bill because of the fiscal notes. We've had a delay with the fiscal notes being produced, which is why we're here at this later stage, which is also why we're continuing to move forward.
And Mr. Walsh, if you could be able to enlighten us on information on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, a fiscal note has been requested on several different versions. The current version is not yet completed. Corrections is requested to respond to the fiscal note, but has not yet put in any data.
Very well. Representative Johnson.
If Mr. Walsh could get that forwarded to us as well as soon as he received it, so we have a good understanding of it, so we know where this bill will end up going and if it can go anywhere.
Very well. All right, any other members? If not, Representative Frazier, last comments here.
Only that this bill seeks to focus and focus on our workers that we have deemed essential workers. They are essential workers. Think about the folks in our corrections. And we want to make sure that we keep them centered as we move out of this pandemic. And we're still in the midst of the pandemic. So I urge the committee members to support it.
Very well. With that, then, Representative Frazier renews this motion to refer. We did not amend this. Refer House File 41 to the Health and Human Services Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel. Representative Grossel. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt. Representative Hewitt. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero. Representative Lucero. Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, nay. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, no.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston. Representative Poston. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, nay.
Representative Raleigh, nay. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang, excused. Representative Grossel. Representative Lucero. Representative Hewitt. Representative Mueller. Representative Poston. That concludes roll call with 9 ayes and 4 nays.
With 9 ayes, Representative Johnson?
Just so the public knows that's listening, it's after 2:30. We had a number of members from both sides of the aisle that had to go to different committees.
Indeed. On a vote of 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. And House File 41 is referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. Members, until next Thursday this week, this committee stands adjourned.